Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. I feel like I got to put extra funk on it today and some added syncopation. In case you guys are tuning in for the first time ever, this show covers all things innovation, ideas, smart people doing smart things, and I'm sitting right in front of a smart person doing a smart thing. Say hello, Elmo Lovano.
So happy to be here, feeling really smart.
So easy to replace that V with a Z.
Yeah, but that, I mean, I guess it still stays Italian.
Yeah, exactly. It's authentic.
We'll keep it as a V.
Speaking of keeping, when did you cut your hair?
Oh, speaking of losing, I cut my hair when I decided to change my life and start a tech company and not
is that really when you did it?
Not tour the world anymore. Yeah, because I had the long hair because I was headbanging.
Yeah.
Playing drums. I was like, I got to have the long hair. I'm feeling great. And then all of a sudden I had a tech company and I was like, I got to cut my hair. I'm feeling not so great with this long hair. I'm feeling a little bit odd man out.
Didn't want to rock your man bun at the investors meetings?
I was sitting there talking to my engineers and I was like playing with my hair and they don't have hair. And I was like, I got to cut my hair. I can't keep doing this. And then I did. It actually felt really good.
It looks good.
Thank you.
Before we go too far down that road, why don't you give us the 101 on who Elmo is and we'll jump in.
Elmo Lovano. I'm a drummer, first and foremost. Drummer, music director, producer. Started touring when I was 15. Spent half my life touring and making records and playing drums, doing cool music projects. And had a great time doing that. And essentially, as I was, on my journey in the music industry, I just continually observed and saw a lot of things that I thought I could do better, or a lot of inefficient things that I thought I could help solve, with useful solutions. And that's kind of what led to Jamcard and me, deciding. That was like the big part, was deciding, okay, I actually want to go and pursue and try to build this and, take a hard turn and not just focus on my music anymore and focus on a whole new area that I'm, don't know how to do.
That's an interesting thing, though. It's, a lot of us have ideas in the back of our heads, or, it's Yelp syndrome, just complain about everything and then not do anything about it. Mm-hmm. What went into that decision of like, okay, I'm going to do, as opposed to just like recognize that there's an area that should be better?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I had thought of Jamcard 4 years before I decided to go all in and build it. You have to really want to, right? So I knew when I thought of Jamcard, I was like, okay, I would love to have this. I would love to build this. I would love to have it exist. And then the first person I pitched it to was my dad, who's an entrepreneur, and he told me from the start, that's a great idea. You should build that, but you're going to have to go all in. You can't tour. You can't make records anymore. It's going to be way more work than you ever imagined. And I was like, cool, thanks for the heads up. Not going to do it. I was like 24 and drumming around the world. I'm going to stay here and try to keep this growing. This is working pretty well. What made me do it was I couldn't stop thinking about it over those next 4 years. And on top of that, I kept seeing all these new use cases for it and how all my peers would use it in different ways, whether they were a drummer or a singer or a engineer or a manager or a songwriter, whatever it is. I was like constantly observing, because I'm a big collaborator on no matter what context. I love collaborating with people, so. In doing that, I was just like, man, I have to make this. The quote that got me to actually jump or make the jump was the simplest quote ever, which is, you never know unless you try.
It's like an old grade school poster.
It really is, And I was like, the way I looked at it was, if I do this and it works, that's going to be incredible. If I do it and it doesn't work, I'll at least never think about it again. I can get it off my mind and put it to rest. So that was like the main thing that made me commit and be like, okay, I'm going to try.
Did you have other entrepreneurial ideas along the way? Or was this like the one thing that could, like, because obviously you had a really successful track record in music, but was there any other ideas that had popped up in between time?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, if you have a band and you've successfully monetized that band, you're an entrepreneur in my book, because monetizing a band is like one of the hardest products to monetize, right? So you have to get your band together. You got to make an album of sorts. You have to sell it and have people actually pay for it and want to pay for it more than past your friend circle, you know? Like if you can make a living off music, you're an entrepreneur in that way. So outside of making albums, sure, and stuff, I threw this weekly art and music event in Hollywood that I started when I was 23. And that was my first thing.
You started Hollywood when you were 23?
I started.
No, I'm kidding.
Yes. I created this thing called Hollywood when I was 23. I was like, you know what? I have these big letters that spell Hollywood. Yeah, I should just put it on this hill. This hill is not being used.
It's like the worst game of Scrabble ever.
Yeah.
Okay, I got an H, two L's.
I was like, Wallyhood. And my dad was like, no, Hollywood. Where are we going?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Because it was at CineSpace. We talked about this before.
It was at CineSpace, yeah, which is where I met Jack, who's now our head of operations, sure, for Jam Card. Shout out to Jack. Jack was the GM of the venue at the time. And so that was my first entrepreneurial thing outside of just making an album, or was creating a live event. So big learning curve there as well. How do you throw an event? What do you need to do? How to get people in the door? How to sell tickets? How to get the bar up?
And one that would, like, just talk to us a little bit about the event, because it was super successful.
Right.
I love you told the story about Skrillmo, but just kind of, you know, walk us through some of the successes of that, because I don't want to overlook that.
Yeah, it transitions really nicely into Jam Card, because essentially I came home from I toured 15 to 22. I came home and just saw that the art and music community was in fragments in LA, and I was just like, well, there's no physical hub. I want to create the physical hub. And I had some hype or a little bit of a following at the time, so I was like, well, I feel like I could pack the room, you know, like a 300-person room. I might as well use that as an opportunity to promote my friends who are super talented and deserve exposure but aren't necessarily good at promoting themselves or releasing their music, so I can at least give them an audience, you know. And that was the simple form of, sure, of the idea. Was I have a lot of talented friends. I love promoting my friends, you know, and we can get people in the room, and if they buy drinks, then the club owner is happy, and then I can continue doing this artistically. So the event, you know, the very first residency we gave, well, it started with my band, The Devil's Orchestra, was the resident for 72 weeks, which we were planning on doing like 3 or 4 weeks. So the fact that it even got to 72 was absurd. We didn't even realize what was happening. We're just like, well, we're still here. Okay. There's still people coming and paying. Okay, great. And then the first residency I gave after Devil's Orchestra was Young the Giant.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually called the Jakes at the time, but it was the same band with the same songs. And they got signed out of the event and everything via their manager, Ben, and changed their name to Young the Giant, like, right then, and did really well, you know?
Nice.
Still really close friends,
yep,
super supportive of them. They ended up moving into my house and writing their second record, too. Side story. So when everyone from them, and then the last residency we gave was Skrillex. And these were the first Skrillex shows with him as Skrillex. We actually started booking him. He hit us up. He's been a friend of mine, because we used to tour in our like punk rock days, hardcore days, on the Warped Tour when we were kids. And he told me he was making electronic music. He showed me this thing called Dubstep out of London. He blew my mind. And then he showed me the songs he was making, and I was like, what? I've never heard music like this, bro.
That's
this
crazy.
Is amazing. Because him and I are both like metal kids, and dubstep was kind of like electronic metal, especially his kind, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, this is amazing, bro. You need it. Let's do this at the club. So we did it just as his name, Sonny Moore, at first. And then he hit me and he's like, I got an idea for a name. It's Skrillex. And I was like, okay. And then we started doing it as Skrillex. And then as he grew, and then he was playing literally in the patio at first, playing dubstep music in there. 60 people, 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would do it at first, and it became 70 people, then it became 80, and then we put him in the lounge where the DJs performed, and it was like 150 people.
So, just to put it in context, let's talk a little bit about Jam Card, and
yep,
I have a theory on your evolution, but just,
yep,
you know, just walk us through the Jam Card brand and experience and platform.
Totally. So, yeah, fast forward to today. So, Jamcard is the music professionals network. We have an app that is an invite-only social network for vetted music professionals. It's kind of like LinkedIn meets IMDb meets Instagram, but for the music industry, and with a curated member base where everyone in the app is a vetted active professional. So the app's doing really well. We have a high engaged user base. We're booking a lot of the biggest tours right now, supplying the musicians for them, or crew as well. So we have all sorts of instrumentalists, but we also have, singers, songwriters, producers, engineers, managers, tour managers, front of house guys, lighting directors, kind of whatever you need for your tour, your studio session. We can build that for you very quickly.
So my introduction to Jamcard was actually at one of the jam sessions.
Okay, yeah.
I got to see Ty Dolla $ign.
Nice. Oh, the Jam.
Yeah. I know you guys just wrapped a documentary on trap jazz, which I was listening to in the studio today. It's like getting warmed up for this conversation.
Nice.
But, why create all those additional things? Most companies will say, let's laser focus on getting users. Maybe this is a way of doing it, but, mm-hmm. why build these other elements to take time, energy,
totally.
Et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So originally, the reason why we started doing content was because at the time I was having tech problems or difficulties in getting the app where I wanted it. Via dev, because I was a new technologist. I didn't have much experience there. So I was getting very frustrated with attempting to build the app and just not being able to hit our deliverable dates and our release dates. And I was like, well, you know what? We could start making content because I'm ready to start building the brand. I had a lot of my peers ready, people asking about Jamcard, my close friends. And I was like, okay, I have these, certain people. I'm ready to start building it. I know I could think of a show and just execute that by a certain day and hit a deliverable and put it out. So I was at the time researching how Ringo got in the Beatles. And I couldn't find it anywhere from the horse's mouth, from him.
Yeah.
I can only find other people talk about it. And I was like, oh, I wish there was just a show. It was just how I got the gig. And Ringo just said how he got the Beatles gig. I was like, oh, that's a good idea for a show. So I called Jack. I was like, yo, do you like this idea? How I got the gig, blah, blah, blah. He was like, I like it. Let's run with that. I was like, will you help me produce it and put a camera team together and direct and whatever? He was like, for sure. I was like, all right, cool. And then I made a list of 15 people that were my ideals for season one, called all 15 of them. And pretty much in the next 10 days, we filmed the whole first season. 12 were schedulable in those dates.
Yeah.
So scheduled those because we're dealing with, touring musicians mostly. So you never know who's going to be in town or not. And so it happened very organically. It was not planned. It was really just a pivot on a reaction of how do I just start building the brand right now? Tech is hard. Building the Jamcard app is the hardest thing I've ever done, And now, we're not, it's never finished. An app is a living thing. Now it's out. It's great. I'm very, very proud of it and happy with it. And we will continue to build it and are continuing to. But for the first, it was 8 months or so, we were okay, we did how I got the gig, put it up. People started really liking it.
Yeah.
People were sharing it. I was like, okay, cool. This is still building the Jamcard brand. It's still music professionals. It's telling their story. It's empowering them. It's helping gain exposure for them. It's showing that musicians are important. It's showing that the stars behind the stars, or the people behind the stars, are stars too, and all of that stuff that we're all about. So it felt good.
Yeah.
I was interviewing people. I never interviewed anyone before. I was never planning on it either. It was just all of a sudden, okay, who's going to ask how I got the gig and do, okay, I guess it's me, right? So, and then next thing you know, long story short, the Grammys ended up licensing that from us and putting it on the front page of Grammy.com. It was Jamcard Presents on Grammy.com, and there's our members, and it's like, rad. It's like, well, because of Jamcard, our members who are like, Kendrick Lamar's drummer is on the front, not Kendrick, or Victoria, who's Beyonce's keyboardist, is up there, or Morris Hayes was Prince's music director and keyboardist. So it's like these people who are a lot of the times behind the artists on the front of the Grammy site because of Jamcard. So I was like, this is tight.
Yeah.
And then it really grew from there. Jack and I always have too many ideas. So it's like, how about the show where I go to bands production rehearsals, because, and that'll happen because Kid Cudi's drummer Mike Moore was in the I saw on his Instagram that he was in the studio and he showed his rig real quick, and I was like, dude, can I come and put a camera on that tomorrow at rehearsal at Kid Cudi rehearsal? And he was like, sure, bro. I was like, all right, great. So I went and did it, just filmed it, literally me and him, that next morning at 9 a.m. And then I finished, told Jack, like, after. I was like, I just filmed something really cool. It's another show. I don't know what it is. And then I just was throwing around names. I was like, Gear Goggles, as, like, a play on words. So that's how that show happened. Every show has happened just organically, opportunity. Same thing with now the Trap Jazz documentary happened because Devin Taylor, who's one of our members, I got hit up from Adrian X, who's Drake's music director. Yep. He wanted to build a band, but all his players were Toronto, Party Next Door. He was building it for Party Next Door, who's on OVO with Drake and the whole Drake crew. They wanted an LA band. So he's like, can you build me an LA band via Jam Card? I was like, sure. And together we built him this crazy band, which had Devin in it. So next thing you know, they're in tour. They're playing the Forum with Party Next Door and Halsey. Devin hits me up, yo, we got a day off. I've been working on this new music. It's called Trap Jazz. I'm going to hit you with it. We should do a jam or something. He sends it to me, and it's amazing. Yeah. Right? I'm just like, this is amazing. Cool, let's do a jam. Let's let LA hear this. And then the day before the jam, I was like, wait, we got to put cameras on these guys. These guys are so special. They have amazing personalities. They're insane musicians. Like, this music is crazy. I don't know what it is, but let's just document it. So we went and got two cameras and just put it on their rehearsal, and then them playing the jam the next day, edited it, and we're like, made a little trailer, and we're like, wow, this should be a doc.
Yeah.
This should be a feature doc. And then next thing you know, 2 months later, we get it funded. We're making our first feature doc. So none of it was really, none of it on that side is...
But you almost have like a missing gene, right? And I think it might come from the fact that you started being a professional when you were 15. You know, what do you think that you missed out on that has helped you? Because, you know, a lot of kids, at some point, we become stifled by like our inner circles. But here you are out on the road, and you, like, you're big-heartedness. Like, you seem like a big kid, you know, right now.
Right.
But, you know, what do you think it was that you missed out on that has helped you?
It's a great question. I would say I maybe missed out on fear or being taught structure. Like, oh, you have to follow these rules. Like, I didn't go to film school. I didn't go to college. I didn't go to business school. I didn't go to music school. I'm a self-taught drummer. I'm a self-taught entrepreneur. I'm a self-taught content creator, now producer. I'm self-taught on everything I do. You know, I don't pay attention in school. I'm not a good scholar. Like, I will just ADD out. Start drawing pictures of drums, you know, like a big child.
Scholarly in your own way.
Scholarly in my own way. I'm a hands-on learner, and if I'm interested, I will tunnel vision in, and you won't stop me, you know. And I will create and have fun with it, you know. But once again, collaborating. Yeah. I will not be creating alone. Yeah. I will find people that I love working with, and we will start doing stuff together.
But that was the other thing that I wrote down was, I put it in quotes, was friendship.
Right? Yeah, all about working with my friends, surrounding myself. Yeah. My friends are all, you know, my favorite musicians.
And what's your definition of relationships? You know, whether work, business, play, or do they all blend? It seems like they blend, but like...
That's a great question also. You're really good at this,
I'm on
dude.
Fire.
Wow. I would say my definition of friends is family. I consider a lot of my friends family, you know, and I think people, you get born into a family, right? So you get your family that you're given. Maybe you like them, maybe you don't. You've seen it all, right? I am very close to my family. I have a relatively small family. But my brother and my mom and dad and I are very, very close. But I also have friends that are like my brothers and my sisters and that I'm, you know, super proud of and will help any way I can and all that. So I feel like you have like your family that you can build and choose and then you have your given family, you know. But so, I mean, Jam Card, A, our team feels like a family and our member base feels like a family. I mean, everyone, we all call it the Jam Fam. Like, it feels like this giant family that's growing. So they say with companies and company culture and everything and like all roots to the founder, you know, because
absolutely.
If I put on the first five people, which then makes the first 50, which then makes the first 500, 5,000, 50,000, whatever, it all starts from there. So I would say that's like something I'm most happy about. That was also not intentional. Yeah. It's just organic and authentic, well, is that it feels like a family now.
Well, when you think about, you know, every business at some point, right, there's deliberate scale.
Yeah.
Is there, what are you most fearful about with that? Because you said that, like, the 5 to the 50 to the 500,
yeah,
like, is what's on your mind when you think about scaling a, yeah, a jam cart?
My fear is it's hard to scale quality. You can scale quantity, right? But one thing that my buddy Ray Brady, who's super smart, works with everyone from like Grimes, Santi Gold, all these people. He always told me you can either be Chanel or Target. You can't be both.
Right.
So I've started with, you know, Jamcard being more modeled after Chanel in terms of like, oh, we are all active professionals, you know, at a certain tier. But then, so how do you scale that?
Right.
You know, and right now I'm surrounding myself with the smartest people I can to figure that out and make the best decisions.
That you are, my friend.
Starting with this guy right here. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Audible high five for the audience. I had to hit it extra.
Just, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of learning. Like, for example, we just launched Atlanta, which was our first city outside of L.A., and we learned a lot. So it was like, okay, that was our first taste of scaling outside the city, and now we're about to launch our or announce our second launch outside of L.A., and we will do that even better because you learn and you tweak. So I would say I don't have those answers yet because we haven't scaled what,
sure,
you know, what a venture capitalist would consider scale.
Exactly.
Yet, you know, we're seed round. We're still a startup, you know. But from what I hear from a lot of these smart people is that we are doing it the right way because you can't build it for a million people or 10 million people. You build it for a niche, you know, and those are all the companies that do scale.
Yeah.
You can figure it out, you know, so it's all part of the process. But I feel like, I feel proud of how we've done it on our own. Super, you know, I still consider us DIY, you know,
very much so. It all is, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're building something that hasn't been built before. It's right. All do it yourself. I mean, there's certain blueprints and things like that, but
yeah. So yeah, so I would say I fear that when we scale, quality drops, or I guess my major fear would be if we scale and then our original members don't feel the value or the heart that they did, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that'll be the toughest challenge is like, how do you grow something and make the people that are, 'cause there's always the original people like, I was here first.
Oh, that's any brand. Like,
it's any brand.
Know,
yeah.
It's Comic-Con, you know, it's like, well, what are all these corporations doing? It's like, 'cause it was good. Like, it was good enough that you know, that money and pop culture came into the picture. Does the phrase Ray Schremer mean anything to you?
Oh yeah.
Okay, cool.
Oh, like,
I'm kidding. Okay. No, well, you know, backwards, it's drummer's ear, right?
Yeah, right. Which I only found out pretty recently.
Oh, see? I thought I was going to enlighten you on something drumming-oriented.
You reminded me.
Even better. No, I find that, you know, a lot of people that come from one craft and, you know, enter another, there's some similarities or a rhythm that mm-hmm. they, you know, that they find that's similar to their old, like, what's similar to being an entrepreneur to just being a drummer?
Oh yes. Okay. So I have this whole thing that I've been working on, that is essentially, there's so many similarities. Like, that's why building a band is building a brand, you know, it's all building a brand essentially with whatever you're doing, hopefully building culture. So one thing I've learned and acknowledged quickly is that, a big similarity is like major labels are like venture capitalists. The VCs are the major labels in tech world and music world. And the angel investors are the indie labels. And so how I saw my bands work and my friends' bands work to the point where they were actually successful and happy, because I've seen my friends, you know, become quote unquote successful, what someone would consider successful, but they're not happy. In music, right? They get big, but it's like, oh, it's this, not exactly what I thought it was going to be, yada yada. So to relate to that, I would recommend if you're starting a band, the way to build your band is to get your people together, bootstrap it, make a demo, get it out so where you can sell tickets, get it to a point where you could sign a small indie deal, which could help get you on the roads. So you could sell a few hundred tickets like right. around the country, build it to there. Once you accomplish that and you have this, you know, fan base, then you're ready to scale, even though that word isn't used in music, yeah. right? Then you're ready to scale. Then you can sign your major label deal because you're going to the major and you're showing, hey, I know my demographic. You know, I have a, I can sell, I'm good for this amount of tickets without X amount of marketing that you're right. about to put in and all this. So give, let me have creative control or more creative control.
Absolutely.
And then you can actually do that. So that's my approach with Jamcard is I did bootstrap it first. Then we went and raised angel money. So I can prove, hey, this is an important market that people just haven't been paying attention to.
Yeah. And as a drummer, right? Like you're kind of holding the cadence of an entire, you know, musical library, I'd say. As a leader, now CEO, what is like the actual art of drumming, you know, giving you in terms of holding that cadence and keeping everybody together?
Another great question.
I'm going to do this all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hard out, but.
I would say, drumming teaches you a lot how to split your brain. Because A, you have four limb separation. If you get into really nerdy drumming, which I definitely did and still am. So separating all four of your limbs, you can play four different time signatures at once. Most people can't play a time signature or two, polyrhythms at once. So, right. so you get that because you're training yourself. It's like a multitask functionality, right? And it's just a way for you to process. The other thing is drummers are typically like the operators of bands, right? Like when you're in a, when you're a garage band, DIY, whatever, like the drummer's typically the guy booking the shows, getting the van, doing the load in, kind of that. So mm-hmm. The business sense, you know, a lot of times like the drummer will be the one that like ends up goes and starts a company or does something like that. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, that's just like we're the glue or we are the backbone.
Right.
You know, so that is a responsibility, you know, being a drummer, that is your big responsibility. You miss one thing, it is the most noticeable thing missed. You know, you speed up, you slow down, you miss a beat, you drop a stick, you do whatever. So yeah. You have to be taught the strength and the consistency to be the backbone, which then when you have that confidence, which is the best place it comes from, because the confidence and your internal metronome is the most powerful thing that you can learn as a drummer, because that's how you can stay straight. Because if you second guess yourself in anything,
yeah,
you know, you're going to slow down no matter what, at the very least. So learning that confidence and that internal metronome and then the polyrhythmic challenge and all that stuff, I think definitely goes into business, because if you're going to be a leader, you have to be confident. You know, you have to make decisions, move forward, and hopefully people surround you the way a band surrounds a drummer.
There's a book in there somewhere.
Jack.
I mean, you don't have time.
Jack, write it.
Jack, write the book. Get a camera.
I'm already writing.
Exactly, yeah, I've got the first six pages done already.
Jack's
got to
write that book.
But I couldn't spell polyrhythmic.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same poly as the other poly. And then you add rhythmic. Okay.
Are you always this jovial? And or what pisses you off?
Jack says yes. I'm a pretty jolly guy. I'm a pretty happy guy. What pisses me off? Oh, my God. Look.
Don't look at me so hard. That was...
Okay, I'm sorry.
You know what pisses me off?
I started getting pissed.
You.
Look. I like moving fast. I guess what pisses me off is, people going back on their word pisses me off. People talking shit on my family. Any kind of family. Any kind of family. Yeah, people that break their word. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I don't get pissed easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta really fuck up to have me be pissed off. And I have to feel
it
like it's
like
somewhat
a real threat too.
Feel like it's somewhat like, deliberate.
Like there's for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. So like the opposite end of this book end of your personality is probably dangerous.
Don't test me.
Exactly. So what are you looking most forward to with Jamcard? Like, you know, is there something maybe top secret in the vault that you're like, this is going to change the game?
Yeah, there's several. We have a pretty extensive, you know, 5-year plan. I think most people don't know that, you know, only a business person would care really to, or even ask about that. But there's a lot in our plan that I'm super excited about. And I also get really excited because a lot of my favorite things that have happened with Jamcard weren't planned anyways. So, you know, your pivots are just your natural things that evolve. So I'm excited to see what happens first and foremost. And right now, especially, I feel like we've been proving ourselves. So there's a lot of really incredible people reaching out. So I feel very lucky to be meeting with the people I've been meeting with recently and getting to converse with and learn from. So I'm super excited about that. We do have a lot of projects. We have a couple projects we're developing right now that I'm super excited, you know, about. And then we have ones that are still dreams that I'm excited to chase. I don't know. I mean, we already started talking about the Trap Jazz Doc, which we haven't announced yet.
Oh, well.
I'm excited about that. You know,
we don't edit.
I'm excited about. I'll tell you what. We have several jams we're developing right now.
Yeah.
That I'm really excited about. If there's like four in development, and if any one of the four happens, it's going to be like, hell yeah. And if all four happen, it's going to be like, hell yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah.
Well, I got a tambourine at home, man. So if you
you're
need
in.
Me, yeah.
You got to apply on jamcard.com.
Dang. So as we wind out, you know, sounds like you've been on a huge learning curve just in general. And you also just had a birthday. And I have this theory on a Jesus year.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Jesus died when he was 33 and you just got out of that age. Sorry if I'm giving another secret. But what was that year? What was 33 like for you? Because I know for me it was like, I mean, a lot of people I talk to with this theory is like such an epic year.
Yeah.
Ups and downs and things like that. So what was that like for you?
It was like
and
that.
Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. Lots of ups, lots of downs. It was a tough year. I feel like I grew an enormous amount this year. I've definitely changed. I know the years where I was developing Jamcard, I never called myself CEO. I would only say founder. I never felt like a CEO. I never wanted to be a CEO. And I feel like this year I learned to embrace being a CEO, which is just a different mindset. You know, I don't know if it's a confidence thing or whatever it may be, but I feel myself getting much smarter on the business side because I literally was touring for 15 years, you know, like I would do business things within it, but not like this,
sure.
You know, and not with now people watching and investors and everything else that comes with it. So I would say this year I grew my following. I grew my company's following. I grew, amazing mentors. I learned probably the most I've ever learned in a single year was in my Jesus year, for sure. And I felt like I was being given a responsibility in leading.
Yeah.
And I have embraced it, especially as we were coming more towards the end of my 33, which I guess ended on Monday. More and more I'm embracing it.
Yeah.
And I feel more confident and comfortable and happy about it. And I made it through. 27, I was really scared.
26 was for me. At 26, I was like, I was officially out of 18 to 25. And I was like, I should have made something of myself by now. Like, I'm an adult. And I still have that feeling every day. So
it happens.
The show's called Innovation Crush. As you've seen the world and have been building a business and talking to people and getting advice, and I know you guys shot VR at the, you know, the jam that I went to. What do you currently have an innovation crush on? Could be a meal, could be a cuisine. I don't know. Like,
yes. Okay. Great. Great question. I think AR is going to flip the world upside down. I think VR is really cool, but I think AR is going to just change our lives much faster than we expect. I'm really excited about autonomous vehicles. I got to ride in a driverless Tesla while I was at the steering wheel. It's pretty tight.
It's crazy,
I was like,
right?
I can get used to this. I'm excited about music technology and where music's going. I think music's finally, after like 15 years, you know, was flipped upside down and had a really bad two decades. And now it's growing and technology right now, what's tight about technology and millennials and everything is transparency. is very important. And I think that's what we need right now mm-hmm. in order to get out of the mess, right? Is going to come from transparency and data. Obviously, there's all sorts of data issues, but Absolutely. Like at the same time, it's going to help us identify a lot of things. And so I think a transparent music industry is very exciting, or entertainment industry in general is very exciting to me. And I think will enable people who had less of a chance. Yeah. I think they'll have more of a chance.
It's also interesting, you know, there's a theory, and I'll try to summarize the quote, but it's like, as the music industry goes, so does the rest of the entertainment industry,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you know, kudos to you for, like, taking a leap of faith and, like, building a tool that gives people opportunity, you know.
Thank you, man.
That's pretty cool. Last but not least, innovation to me is, complete the phrase for me.
Sexy. Why did I look at Jack?
With the double eyebrow raised, too.
Innovation to me is necessary and sexy.
Sexy is necessary. Explain a little bit further. Yes.
Next question.
Yeah, that felt like a Me Too moment. I feel violated.
Don't. There's witnesses. We're fine. Look, this is mutual.
So where can people go to find out more about you? I'm disappointed you didn't wear your interview with the vampire sunglasses.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. Yeah. Okay, continue.
There you go. We got to get a photo
I'm
of that.
I'm vibed out. Well, can we start over?
Yeah. Welcome to another installment of it.
I like innovating.
Where can people go to find you, Jamcard, Jack?
Yep, jamcard.com, 2 M's, one word, JAMMCARD. That's also our Instagram. Our Instagram's popping every day with all the best music professionals. We post videos of our members just killing it and having fun every day. I'm Elmo Lovano, Lovano, on all things Instagram. Really just Instagram, man. Twitter, I like repost them there. Jamcard's YouTube is kicking. Mine isn't, but Jamcard's YouTube is worth a watch, too. And our Facebook. I'm pretty much putting all the energy in Jamcard.
As you should.
My Instagram, Jamcard everything else's.
Sexissary.
Yeah, sexissary.
everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.